From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, could the U.S. withdraw from Syria set back religious and regional security in the Middle East? We'll talk about it with Claire Lopez with the Center for Security Policy, and we'll also check in with FRC's Travis Weber. And speaking of freedom, how about the freedom of speech here in America? Republican Whip Steve Scalise is here to discuss the reintroduction of the Free Speech Fairness Act. It's designed to rein in the Johnson Amendment's muzzling effect on churches. And is the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, along with the National Association of Evangelicals, playing with fire in trying to appease the LGBTQ activist community by supporting the so-called Fairness for All Act, a bill that Nancy Pelosi is pushing? Eric Stanley, senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, is here to explain. Also tomorrow night, the president speaks to the nation in his State of the Union address. What might he say? What does he need to say? Chairman of the House Republican Study Committee, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, weighs in on that topic. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. President Trump appeared on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday and, among other topics, discussed U.S. troops withdrawal in Syria. And while he wants to withdraw them long term, the president recognizes the importance of stabilizing Syria in order to protect Israel. Joining me now to talk more about this is Claire Lopez. She is vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy. Claire, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks very much, Tony. I'm glad to be with you.
Let's talk about the president, talking this weekend about, he does want to withdraw troops from Syria. But it seems that he clearly understands that if America withdraws too quickly, it creates a huge vacuum.
Well, the number one thing to understand is that there is no Syria anymore. It is the former Syria. It's been chopped up into various parts. Humpty Dumpty will not be put back together again. But I think that the presence of those American troops, although the numbers are small, 2,200 or so, but they played a critical role. First of all, the visuals of it, the optics of it, meaning it meant that we had skin in the game. It meant that the United States was committed to the mission, which is not just the Islamic State, which, by the way, will rise again, but more broadly, and it's been articulated, I think, best perhaps by National Security Advisor John Bolton, also Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, that those troops were there in part, and our commitment with them was there to block the expansion of Iran and its proxy forces throughout the region. And so where they sat astride certain crossroads, it wasn't just a crossroads in the middle of the desert someplace. What is happening, and people don't realize it, is that Iran is actually building up and populating the entire length of what they hope to be a land corridor stretching from Iran all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. The former Syria, and of course Lebanon, with a front row, seat against Israel. So, the space of the corridor, the space that runs from Iran to the Mediterranean, is being built up with towns and villages that are being populated, population movement, by Shiites from Iraq. And Shiites from Syria,
and so to protect that corridor,
to protect the corridor. And as the United States troops sat astride that intended corridor, at least one route of it, it demonstrated, our resolve to block it.
When you look at Turkey, Turkey is one of really four countries that really wants to get into this region, especially the northeastern region of Syria. We've talked about this on the program here recently. about that's one of the it's a nascent democracy that's developed there, the only one in the Middle East outside of Israel. You've got Russia wanting to be in the game. You've got Turkey wanting to be in the game. You've got Iran wanting to be in the game, and of course Assad there in Syria as well. The United States is really keeping all of those entities at bay.
Well, certainly involved. I mean, certainly the United States is involved with all of them. I don't know about a day. The Turkish government, we have to understand, under the leadership of current President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the AK Party, that stands for Justice and Development Party, is a Muslim Brotherhood regime. Turkey today and for the last several years has demonstrated itself to be a neo-Ottoman jihad state. It is no longer an ally of the United States or of NATO. And it's already carved out an enclave of its own along its border with what used to be called Syria. It is occupying that enclave and intends to strike in further with troops, tanks, and planes. And that is
so. What happens? What happens then?
Against the Kurds, but.
So what happens then if the United States withdraw too soon before stability is in that region?
Well, I mean, some might say, as I think, you know, former governor of Alaska once put it, Sarah Palin, you know, let Allah sort it out. And all of these various power players, meaning Turkey, Damascus, Tehran, Baghdad, would go at it, scrabbling for their own, you know, influence there with Russia. Playing some kind of a role or other, you know, in keeping Bashar al-Assad in power or somebody, you know, Alawite in power in Damascus, but not with the same objective as the jihadi forces of Iran and Baghdad to destroy Israel. So Russia in a very in-between position, the same thing for us, the United States, but all the rest jihadis scrambling for what they can grab.
Claire Lopez, one final question on this. Because of what's taken place there in the northeast region of Syria, which is about a third of the country, you have this democracy that has developed with various ethnic groups, religious backgrounds. They recognize religious freedom. They have women in power. This could become a real influencer in the Middle East, but if the United States withdraws and they're either the Turks come in, the Turkish people come in, the Turkish government comes in after the Kurds who have been protecting the Christians, that whole thing just folds and we could miss a huge opportunity.
Well, I guess you're talking about the Kurdish enclave in the northeastern part of what used to be called Syria, which is a fairly secure area. The Kurds, of course, Peshmerga, those who face death, are renowned fighters, and they can be expected, I think, with continuing U.S. support, if not actually troops on the ground, a loss, but a continued support to be able to defend that enclave where, yes, Christians have been defended, although Yazidi minorities would see it in another way. They think that the Kurds have attacked, killed them, and stolen their land. But the Christians have a different perspective. But that enclave can be expected to survive, which is part of the reason why I call it the former Syria. It's never going to be put together, you know, the way it was by the great powers after World War I, beginning of the 20th century. But it's important, I think, that we continue to support the Kurds, not just because they fought with us and our troops and our coalition partners, others, against the Islamic State in the time from 2014 on when it was at its most powerful, but also because the things you just mentioned there, Tony, that they have created an economically viable, they have oil, economically viable, tolerant kind of a regime that at least, you know, has some aspects of a democratic system, elections and so forth, representative of the people there. And it would be wrong to allow them to be gobbled up and destroyed by the Turks. Got to realize who are our genuine allies in this region. It's not the Turks, who are a bunch of jihadis supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. Kurds. Yes, and the tragedy, of course, is that, as we know, the Kurds are the largest collection of people, a nation of people, really ancient that have never had their own nation state, but deliberately over the centuries have been carved up into distributed mm-hmm. among parts of other countries like Iran, like Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. So I for one, support their national aspirations. And I think for the good of U.S. national security, to have another ally in the region, we should too.
All right, Claire Lopez, as always, great to have you on the program. Appreciate your thoughts and insights on this.
Thank you.
All right, it's Claire Lopez. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I would say that the president has been listening as he's now talking about, more of a timetable of withdrawal, not overnight. Joining me now to talk about the religious freedom aspect of this is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here and Director of our Center for Religious Liberty. Because, Travis, what's happened there in that northeast region of Syria, which is, I said, about a third of the country, what was previously Syria, that religious freedom has taken root there, and that has the ability to influence the entire Middle East.
It does, Tony. It's really quite incredible when you look at it. Just a day or two ago, there was a news story published on NBC about former Muslims worshiping as Christians in Christian churches. So these are Muslims who've chosen to follow Christ, become Christians.
That's the only place in the Middle East that's happening.
The only place it's happening, certainly to the degree. I mean, arguably in the Kurdistan area of northern Iraq, you could say this is happening. But even both these areas we recognize are linked to the Kurds. This is very, highlighted in this manner, though, where you have you look at the NBC story, Muslims saying, ISIS does not represent me. I wanted to follow Christ, having the freedom to do that, because that may be happening elsewhere, but they're having to do it underground.
Well, but right. Exactly. That's the point. Underground. This is one of the only places in the Middle East, again, outside of Israel, where you see people converting from Islam to Christianity.
Indeed.
Openly.
Right, right. And as Claire mentioned, there are not all places over there are equal in terms of what we're trying to do with support religious freedom. The de facto area, the Federation of Northern Syria now under the control of the Syrian Democratic Council, includes areas like Kobani, the city mentioned in that article. In Kobani, there is a church where Muslim background believers are worshiping, and they're permitting this under their vision of religious freedom. It's really astounding, and it's something we need to try to help cultivate.
Yeah, it's important to know they're not tolerating it. They're embracing it. This is a part of their charter or their statement of social values is religious freedom.
It is. They're embracing
Our type of understanding of religious freedom.
It's very similar to our type, and the specific laws in the text is going to be perhaps different, but the right is freedom to choose how you're going to worship and live that out. And this is groundbreaking.
Which is religious freedom, not the freedom of worship, but the freedom of religion.
That is religious freedom, right? And so much of the Muslim world, there are problems with the notion of apostasy, punishing those converting away from Islam. Here they're protecting those people's freedom to do that.
And that's at risk if America pulls out, the United States pulls out too quickly. Travis Weber, thanks so much.
Thanks,
for
Tony.
Joining us. We're going to be talking about this all week. In fact, we're going to have some Syrians, Christians, who have been in Kobani and seen this firsthand. They're going to be with us. Chris Mitchell is going to be joining us later in the week as well. All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, who is the minority whip, is going to join us to talk about the reintroduction of his bill to protect the freedom of speech here in America. That's next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, for 65 years, the Johnson Amendment, named after Lyndon B. Johnson when he was a senator, has unjustly barred religious leaders and other 501c3 organizations from fully exercising their freedom of speech. Joining me now on Washington Watch on this Monday afternoon is the House Republican Whip, Steve Scalise, who represents the 1st District of my home state of Louisiana, also serves on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and today is here to talk about the bill he is reintroducing to ensure the free speech of churches, pastors, and others. Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always great to be back with you.
Now, you, along with Jody Heiss of Georgia and our friend Mike Johnson, another Louisiana congressman, and Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, are reintroducing the Free Speech Fairness Act. Tell us about it.
That's right, Tony, and I want to thank you for helping us promote this last Congress when we were able to get it included in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that came out of the House. Unfortunately, it didn't make it through the process in the Senate, but it raised awareness to the fact that something we've known all along. Free speech is not being allowed in many of our churches. And when you look at the ability to express your religious freedom, it's something that should be recognized all across our country in any church. It shouldn't just be some churches where they can speak freely and others they can't. But for years since the Johnson Amendment came into play, it's literally been used and abused by the IRS as a threat. If they didn't like the things you were saying from the pulpit, they threatened to take away your tax-exempt status. And that's just not right. IRS shouldn't be able to bully anybody based on the message that they're delivering from their pulpit, whether it's people of faith. Nobody should be afraid of persecution because of just the ability to express their religious views. So by repealing the Johnson Amendment, we don't fully repeal it. We basically make it work for everybody. We make it fair. So it is religious freedom being reestablished, something Jody Heiss and I have been working on for years. And then Mike Johnson, who came in, he's now chairman of the Republican Study Committee, he took this on, too, and joined in. So we just filed the bill today, by the way. It got an official number, Tony. It is H.R. 949. So literally just today we filed it and got that bill number assigned to the bill to reestablish religious freedom.
It's H.R. 949. Folks, write that down because it's something we're going to be talking about. Even though Nancy Pelosi has the gavel, we cannot in any way give up on free speech and restoring that freedom of speech. Nearly, I think, about 50 organizations, including the Family Research Council, National Religious Broadcasters, Alliance Defending Freedom, support this legislation. And, Steve, one of the things I find most really outrageous or offensive about this is that the left-leaning groups use this in teaming up with the IRS to try to intimidate and silence pastors. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of pastors that have told me come election time or when an issue's on the ballot that they get these letters from people like Barry Lynn for the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State saying, if you do this, you will be violating the IRS's rules on your engagement. And this frightens a lot of pastors into silence, and this would eliminate that.
That's exactly right, Tony. You know, this idea that a federal agency like the IRS, of all agencies, can bully people of faith and go into any 501c3 organization, but it was being abused, especially in the nonprofit and houses of worship, where they were literally saying, like you said, these letters saying, if you say certain things, we're going to give you this letter and threaten to remove your 501c3 tax-exempt status. Ironically, they didn't seem to send that many letters out to organizations that were promoting pro-abortion candidates for office, for example. I never heard of a lot of the letters going to those organizations. So clearly it had not been applied fairly. We think it's an unconstitutional rule and law, but with that, the only way to challenge it is for somebody who gets one of those letters to keep speaking freely and potentially lose their tax-exempt status. Nobody should be put in that position, so that's why this bill to repeal the Johnson Amendment, H.R. 949, will reestablish that any 501c3 organization will not be under threat from the IRS for speaking freely about their religious views.
Yeah, and that's a good point to bring up because as I served as the chairman of the Pulpit Freedom Initiative along with working with Alliance Defending Freedom, and pastors across the nation preach sermons specifically targeting the rule, so to speak, to violate it and sent the sermons to the IRS. The IRS never took action on it, never filed a suit because I think you're absolutely right. They understand it's not constitutional. But this has not kept these left-leaning organizations from using this Johnson Amendment to intimidate churches. So I think it's extremely critical that free speech, the understanding of free speech and the rights that pastors and churches and other nonprofits have is reestablished by, simply as you say, reining in this Johnson Amendment language.
Yeah, so it's a bill and an idea whose time has come. Of course, during Barack Obama's tenure, you knew it never had a chance of becoming law because Barack Obama has been siding with those groups that, you know, wanted to threaten people. We saw the IRS under Barack Obama become even more abusive to the point where they were targeting Tea Party organizations and others. It was well documented. And so when Donald Trump took office, he took this on as a cause. And in fact, he talked about it at the National Prayer Breakfast a few years ago. It specifically called for the Johnson Amendment to be repealed. In fact, Jody Heiss and I jumped up off of our chairs and started applauding when he said that at the National Prayer Breakfast. And I think you saw overwhelming support amongst all of those faith leaders at the prayer breakfast because they realized that whether it's them directly being threatened or not, nobody should be threatened for expressing their religious views or their political beliefs.
It's central to our whole idea of being Americans, and it's critical to the preservation of our republic. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for joining us, and let me commend you for taking the lead on this once again. We appreciate it greatly. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks. Great being back with you, Tony.
That was Congressman Steve Scalise, the Republican whip in the House, reintroducing the Free Speech Fairness Act today. All right, when we come back, fairness for all or for some? We're going to talk with Eric Stanley. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Still to come, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana is going to be joining me as well. We'll get kind of his take on what the president needs to address in the State of the Union address. But first, this is a disturbing discussion. World Magazine broke a story not too long ago. The two organizations, the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, along with the National Association of Evangelicals, have decided really the only way to stop LGBTQ activists who essentially want to deny religious freedom to individuals and organizations is to basically wave a white flag. I mean, that's essentially what it is. They are supporting a bill that Nancy Pelosi is pushing called the Fairness for All Act. Now, I think it's the Fairness for Some, but we're not the only ones that have concerns about this. After a decade and a half of contending for religious freedom in the face of those who want to redefine human sexuality, we know who has come up on the short end of the stick. It has been the Christian bakers, the Christian florists, the pastors, others. Joining me now to talk about this, Eric Stanley, Senior Counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom and the Director of the Center for Christian Ministries. Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you today.
All right. Did I misstate what's taking place with the CCU and the National Association of Evangelicals essentially just capitulating?
No, I think that that's a good way to put it, because what Fairness for All would actually do would be to impose a national SOGI law. So it would put sexual orientation and gender identity into a non-discrimination law, and it would impose it on a national scale. And there's currently 28 states that do not have a statewide SOGI law, only 22 do. And so those 28 states and all the cities and counties and all the people in those states, as well as numerous other people, would be subjected all of a sudden to a national SOGI law. And as you mentioned, we've seen the danger of those kinds of things, but yet these proposals continue to be pushed by groups like CCCU and NAE and others.
Now, Eric, I've sat down and I've spoken to them, and I've talked to them, I've listened to their rationale, and what they're doing in exchange for embracing this is that they are being promised these carve-outs for religious organizations, that they would not be directly affected, that they would have some exemptions for their organization because it's a religious organization. I have two problems with that. Number one, I know that that never works out because what it is, it's a divide and conquer strategy by the activist on the other side. But secondly, isn't that a wrong view of our First Amendment freedoms of religion, that somehow it is connected to organizations and not individuals?
Well, that is a wrong view. And I think, you know, the underlying assumption of fairness for all really, it flows from the idea that there should be some sort of limit placed on freedom. And really, I come at it from the perspective, as I know you do, that freedom should be the baseline. And so anything that would cut back on freedom, that would give the government more power to invade on freedom, really should be very limited. It should be very justified. And so this Fairness for All initiative and proposal really rests on the assumption that these SOGI laws are inevitable, it's going to pass, we should just grab everything that we can get right now. And the problem with that is that it does give some religious exemptions, but it also leaves a whole lot of people out in the cold. So it would leave out businesses who have more than 15 employees, for example. It would impose things like a national pronoun mandate, because when you're dealing with the transgender issue, that's what happens. It would also invade the bodily privacy of women and girls, and you end up with absurd cases like what we're dealing with in Anchorage, Alaska, with the Hope Center, where a man who identifies as a female showed up to a shelter for battered and abused women and wanted to sleep in the same room with battered and abused women. And you'll end up with things like these all over the country. And so there really is no compromise on these things that a Fairness for All type proposal would really, you know, show that it's beneficial. What would end up happening instead is, as I said, a lot of people would end up out in the cold on this, and there would be a lot of people who would suffer at the hands of these kinds of laws, because they really are SOGI non-discrimination laws, and we've seen their impact and effect in numerous cases, and that would only intensify if you nationalized it.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of jumped ahead of myself because we deal with this stuff so much, but the top three points that our listeners need to know about what the Fairness for All Act would actually do.
Yeah, so what it is it's premised on kind of a what they call a compromise. And so really the top point would be that the LGBT groups would get a non-discrimination law on the national level that would prohibit discrimination in employment, in places of public accommodation, in housing, and in education on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. In response, there would be these exemptions, of course, that would be given to religious organizations and some small groups. But a lot of people, as I mentioned, would be left out in the cold with that.
Okay, Eric, we're up against a break, and I know you got to go, and we've got to move on to another topic. But I want to ask you to hold for just a moment. We come back because I want you to give the next steps here, where this is going and what people need to do, because this is a pretty significant piece of legislation, the best place to stop this may be in the Senate. So I want to talk about that. Can you hold on for just a moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Eric Stanley's going to stay with us, and Mike Johnson's coming on here in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch to come. We're coming right back after this.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, and the website is tonyperkins.com, and we are glad to have you on this Monday afternoon. All right, Eric Stanley stayed around through that break. We're talking about the Fairness for All Act that Nancy Pelosi is pushing, and she's got these allies, National Association of Evangelicals, the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, with a promise of some security and protection for them, are basically willing to capitulate. Now, Eric, this Nancy Pelosi has made this as one of her top objectives, so I feel pretty certain she's going to get this through the House, because I think the Democrats are going to be supportive of it. I'm not sure how much Republican support in the House they'll get, but it's going to probably be the Senate where it has to stop. But what's the time frame that you see something like this moving?
Well, I think it's going to be fairly soon, because what's going to happen, Nancy Pelosi is also in favor of what's called the Equality Act, which, if you think about Fairness for All as a compromise, this is a lack of a compromise. This is everything that the LGBT groups want, with no exemptions for religious organizations. That is likely to be introduced even as early as this week. I think Fairness for All is going to come in as a compromise solution to that. And so I think this is going to move fairly quickly. You're going to see it start coming to the forefront pretty soon. And as you mentioned, Tony, the Senate really is the focus of the place to stop this. So this is where we need to be encouraging folks to stay in touch with their Senate offices from their state and to tell them to oppose the Equality Act, to oppose Fairness for All if it ever comes to the floor.
Very good. I mean, this is about all those Christian businessmen. This is about your sons and daughters and their privacy and restrooms and locker rooms. I mean, this is all of those little battles we've been fighting across the country now rolled into one big one that will be imposed upon the entire nation.
That's right. It certainly is. And I think this is something that is cause for concern for everyone. And obviously you all and we at ADF will continue to watch this and raise the alarm as need be.
Well, we appreciate all that Alliance Defending Freedom does, and of course, appreciate what you do as well, Eric. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony. Always good to be with you.
All right. Have a great day. All right, folks, I want to encourage you to stay tuned. Keep tracking on this. If you're not getting my daily update, you can do that by going to the website, tonyperkins.com, and sign up so that you can stay on top of this. Also, a better way is to download the Stand Firm app. That way we actually can send out alerts to you so you know when you need to act. And it's just a matter of pushing a couple of buttons on your phone, and you can send a message to your senator when the time is right. So go to the App Store, the Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay, the president tomorrow night is going to be giving his State of the Union address. Now, what are some of the issues that we think he'll be talking about, and what should he be talking about? Joining me now to discuss this, items that you don't want to miss, is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee in the House, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, who represents the 4th Congressional District. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, good to talk with you as well. I know you're heading back to D.C. to be here tomorrow for the President's State of the Union address. And we also, you and I are going to be doing an event in Bossier at First Baptist Bossier coming up. And I want people to get something to write with, because we'll talk about that in a moment, because that's coming up the end of this month. But first, what are some of the topics you think the president's going to focus on in his State of the Union address tomorrow night?
Well, I'll be front and center with my colleagues on the Republican side, conservatives in the House, certainly hoping that he addresses the border battle. We're all expecting that, of course, at the top of the speech, and it'll be highlighted what we're going to do about this legitimate crisis we face at the southern border. Look, we've counted at least 60 Democrats in the House, Tony, in the last several months, who have individually acknowledged that we have a humanitarian and a national security crisis on the border. And everybody's playing politics with this, but it's time for it to come to an end, for good faith negotiations to be resolved. And I commend the president for his efforts there, but we've got to get this fixed. So we certainly hope that he'll address that front and center and take a hard line and get us over the hump, so to speak, so we can avoid another government shutdown. There's a number of options he has on the table, of course, but, you know, we've been working really hard to close the asylum loopholes. I've worked on 3 different bills just in this Congress since we started in January to close the asylum loopholes, and the president's given a lot of attention to that. I expect that'll be part of the speech as well. We need to look at the very specific changes that we can make to our immigration law and the enforcement of it to solve these problems. And there's many other issues as well, of course.
So do you think the president, do you think he should draw basically a red line on border security in his speech to, you know, he's there in front of Congress, obviously speaking to the nation, but, you know, we're in those negotiations. We've just got about another 10 days or so before this 3-week CR runs out. I mean, I think he has to build the wall. I think he's got to do that border security in order for him to really, I think, maintain the enthusiasm and the support of his base.
Well, he does have to build the wall, and there's that, you know, sort of political aspect of it. But this really does transcend politics. It's not just about, you know, the negotiations, as you well know. I mean, the reason that we've all been pushing so hard for this is because we're talking to Border Patrol agents. We're talking to the Department of Homeland Security, and they're saying that this is a legitimate, daily, serious and urgent threat to the American people. And so that's why, you know, we applaud the president for taking the stand that he has.
And not
hopefully
just
Democrats will do the right thing.
And not just the border. I mean, I've actually sat down back in at home in Baton Rouge with agents from Homeland Security that are talking about the drug raids, the human trafficking raids that are being done right there in Baton Rouge, you know, which is miles from the border. This is happening all across the country.
It is, and everyone laments the opioid crisis and all of the narcotics problems that we're having all across the country. If we don't secure the borders, we can pass all the legislation in the world. It's not going to solve the problem. It won't even put a dent in the problem. You've got to secure the illegal narcotics coming over the border. And there was enough fentanyl that came over that they seized in this shipment just last week to kill just about every man, woman, and child in the country. I mean, this is a very serious, urgent problem. And, of course, the human trafficking scourge and the dangerous gang activity and all the rest. We have to seal the border, and walls and barriers work. And by any objective measure and just simple common sense, we know that that is at least a serious deterrent, and it's something we have to do.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, talking about the President's State of the Union address last night. And we're about to talk about a special event coming up in the Bossier City area of Louisiana. But, Mike, one other item that obviously has been front and center in the last 2 weeks because of what New York did in trying to basically expand abortion in fear that the court may overturn or send Roe v. Wade back to the states. There has never been a clear contrast between the two parties on this issue. The president's tweeted out about it. Do you anticipate the president will draw attention to the fact that we have such a clear contrast between ideologies that are governing our country?
Tony, I certainly hope that he addresses that front and center, and I think of the vast majority of the American people are expecting him to address that. We'll be derelict in our duty if we don't. I mean, it is a stark contrast. The things that are being openly advocated for now are absolutely frightening. And, of course, it goes against the very grain of who we are as Americans, the country where we recognize that every single human life is made in the image of God and has inestimable dignity and value, and that we all have equal rights because our rights come from our Creator and not the government. What they're doing in New York, what they're proposing to do in Virginia and these other states is just unconscionable. And the Commander-in-Chief needs to address it front and center. He suggested that he probably will, and he'll get a rousing applause from our side of the aisle when he does.
I want to shift gears here, Mike. You and I are going to tag team on something along with your wife, Kelly, up in at First Baptist Bossier on the 23rd of February. We're going to be doing a God and Government seminar. There's a really kind of basic but helping people understand kind of the connection between our government, what the Bible has to say about it, and how Christians can process and operate and be fully engaged in our government. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, this has been birthed out of necessity, Tony. It's based upon really the seminar that you were doing way back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and Kelly and I were a young newlywed couple who attended one of those seminars, and it was just formative for us. And you and I have lamented this so often in recent months, in the last couple of years, that there's just an urgent need for this kind of just sort of basic back to the grassroots education of the church and believers. And, you know, polls are showing Christianity's in rapid decline in America. We all know that. And the culture's growing more secularized and more coarse, and every single day we're watching it play out on the news, as we've been talking about. And the problem is that so many Christians, so many believers just feel ill-informed. They feel ill-prepared to do anything about that. And you know, Scripture is very clear that we have an obligation to provide substantive answers and oppose false arguments and faithfully apply God's truth and contend for the faith. But people don't know really how to even begin doing that anymore. And so this is our seminar that draws upon nearly, what, 3 decades now that we all have in ministry service and experience and study on the front lines of cultural engagement in America. And we're going to provide that practical guidance on how every single Christian can get involved and help us meet these challenges of the day. So jam-packed seminar. We're going to squeeze a lot into a small amount of time, and hopefully we'll be doing this at a number of churches around the country over the coming months and maybe a couple of years.
Yeah, this is the first one that we're doing together. Is going to be up in at First Baptist Bossier, and the folks, is registration required for them to do this, and they just kind of show up on that Saturday?
Yeah, there's limited seating available, and so this is in Bossier City, Louisiana, northwest corner, the Twin City with Shreveport, Louisiana, for folks that know the region. It's a mega church there, so they've got a lot of capacity, but limited seating available. So the church is asking everyone, it's a free event, but they're asking them to call the First Bossier Church office to register. And that number, if anyone's got a pen, is 318-746-7940. And also, if you go to the website onwardchristiancounseling.org, you'll get a flyer and more of the information and all the details on it.
And we'll also have that information at tonyperkins.com. One of the things, and this is really kind of the heart of this seminar, which actually kind of was birthed out of, I used to teach this once a semester at a Bible college back in the 90s. the Bible does have the solutions to the problems we're facing, and people just don't, as Christians, we don't understand the application of those. And so this is helping people really at the intersection of our Christian faith and government and the culture, how we can not just talk about the problems, talk about the decline, but offer solutions that can make a difference. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, as I met with the president to discuss immigration, I actually put before him the chapter of my book that Bishop Harry Jackson and I wrote on immigration, a 7-point plan based upon biblical principles of how to deal with immigration.
That's exactly right. This is practical, hands-on application stuff. These are the materials that you can use and engage with in your own community to make a difference. And, you know, when you were doing those seminars way back when, Tony, 20 years ago now almost, so many people that sat through those seminars are still engaged out in cultural engagement right now, even today, because it has
don't scare people, because a lot of those folks are now in public office. Doesn't mean that you'll be
many of them are. That's true.
Doesn't mean that you'll necessarily be.
That's right. There's a lot of arenas. There's a lot of places. Right. In fact, every arena of the culture needs to be engaged, and this is the way we do it. And so we're just delighted to put out those life-changing, kind of paradigm-shifting truths.
It is a great foundation for those who go on into public service, because it gives them that solid footing to deal with.
That's right. I use it every day. When I served in the state legislature, I did. When I serve in Congress every day, and you'll be encouraged, and you are encouraged, because you know this. There are many colleagues of ours in serving in all those capacities and all those different levels who are applying these truths as well. And this is how we're going to, how God is going to save America. We're just stewards and servants in the cause.
Well, I look forward to it. That's February the 23rd in Bossier City, Louisiana. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right. Mike Johnson, congressman from the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. To find out more about how you can be a part of this God and Government Conference, go to TonyPerkins.com. That's February the 23rd. Love to have you if you're in the area. All right, folks, just about out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, but I want to encourage you. There's such a tremendous opportunity we have to shape the culture and the country right now. Right now. Be praying. Be praying for the president tomorrow night as he goes into the State of the Union address. And he's going to be preparing, and things are going on even up to the last minute. But pray for him as he does that. Pray for those that are working with him to shape that message. And I pray that it'll be a defining message for the nation. All right. Out of time for today. Until next time. I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.